Welcome to tonight's episode of Well-Rounded Corners. I'm Ruth Ann.
And I'm Robert.
And we're delighted to have with us this evening a very interesting and special guest, and we'll get to her in just a moment. I'd like to remind everyone about our website, Well-Rounded Corners. You can listen to all of our past shows there for free, and you can also find us on iTunes by searching Well-Rounded Corners. If you subscribe to us on iTunes, all new shows automatically downloaded to your computer or iPod within 48 hours of broadcast. You can also listen to us in the archives of our BBS radio page or live every other Friday Tuesday on BBS Radio Channel 1.
We're not going to move to Friday.
I know. I had a moment there again.
It's fine. No, that's fine. Like Ruth Ann said, we're delighted to have Frances Key with us. She is a songwriter, and writer, and she's used her abilities to create material designed to uplift the spirit. This work has included founding the International Peace Performers Chorus, comprised of international children, and writing stage shows and songs in the showcase, as well as writings of other kinds of screenplays, videos, and scripts. She's worked as a music teacher and an English as second language teacher as well, as a social worker with refugees. Frances, we are so delighted to have you here with us this evening.
Thank you. It's a wonderful opportunity.
And now the reason you're here is to talk about, you have a book that you've written and is now available. But before we get to that, if you wouldn't mind giving us just a little bit of backstory about yourself and the situations that led up to you deciding to write the book.
Well, actually, there are two books now available. The first book, both of them are called The Team, A Mother's Wisdom from the Other Side. One is book one and the other book two. And the way this came about is I do have a background in metaphysical studies. My mother and I were extremely close, and we explored metaphysics together. From a very young age, she took me into various schools of study, to some churches, to some groups, and we developed this connection together. When I was 10, I began to do automatic writing, but that only went on for a few years, and she and I moved into a different approach to our truth, and I left that behind. However, off and on through my life, she would tell me, "You need to be doing that automatic writing again. I believe you're older now and you could get some very powerful material." And I told her I really was a little nervous about that subject, and I just didn't want to return to it, and she'd leave me alone. And on the other hand, I was always telling her, "Mother, you need to write a book about your life. You've had the most incredible life as a war bride coming here from Australia in World War II and all these amazing things." And I said, "You should write," even when she turned 80, she died at 86. I said, "When she turned 80, I said, write the spiritual insights of an 80-year-old woman. You know, give that to the world." And she'd say, "I'm too old and tired. I don't want to do it." So, considering our connection, I really don't know why it didn't seem obvious to me that this would happen. But 3 weeks after she died, less than 3 weeks, I began to have experiences with her where she communicated with me. And the information that she poured into me was so unique. It did build upon the metaphysical principles we'd studied and shared, but it was so different. It was from her perspective on the other side. So it couldn't be just from our usual way of thinking here.
Right.
It was something really beyond. And I began to write it down. Sometime I had to handwrite everything. It didn't come unless I would handwrite it. It would come out of the blue when I was anywhere, in a flea market, in the grocery store. It was something I couldn't bring on in any way myself, but just would spontaneously begin. So book one was written in 3 weeks because it was constant. And she died in October, and the book was put out last January. And then this second book is this January. So two books in the 14 months. The amount of information has just been overwhelming, to say the least.
Wow, that is incredible. It does make sense, as you said. You had such a bond, and your interest was in common with the metaphysical field, and that is wonderful that she took you and shared her world with you too.
Well, you know, I've wondered and really been bewildered by how this could occur, because I've searched since she died and read about near-death experiences and things like that. And I never could find anything that could explain to me how it is that somebody could have this kind of portal opened that would be so open and so constant and so much information. I mean, I heard about people having one experience with someone who had died, or, you know, visiting them in a dream, but and then I read something just very recently that somebody gave me, and it was written by Daniel Brinkley. Maybe you've heard of him. He has a number of books out about his near-death experience in the 1970s. And he has gone on to do work with hospice patients, trying to help them make that transition, because he knows what they will expect, and helping them prepare for their life review. And he said that he has had the experience of forming a bond with someone who was ill for a long period of time, like I did with my mother. I took care of her.
Yes.
Until she died here at home. And there being such a vibrational merging that he's actually seeing some of what they've seen, or had an experience with a mutual experience with them that had to do with the other side. So I found some explanation, but beyond that, I really haven't been able to quite understand it myself.
Well, you know, I understand your search, and there are so many things in my life that I can't label, and I searched, and how could this be, and how could this happen, and why did it happen, and so forth. And I've come to the conclusion myself personally that I don't really know that there is a label, or that it's in the human usual experience. You know, as you said, you haven't come across many instances yourself. That is amazing that you've had such a constant stream of information and the bond. That is such a special bond. That's wonderful.
That is truly amazing. You know, in listening to your story, I'm reminded of a quote that I ran across. It was actually in a song a few years back, and it really gave me a very interesting insight into this, you know, into death and life. And the quote is, "Death is not the opposite of life. Death is the opposite of birth. Life is eternal."
And I like that.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's not that there, you know, we think of death and life as these two opposing things, but really, we know instinctively, I think all of us know, that it's really death and birth. These are two events that seem to happen, but life stretches beyond that, and we have so much evidence to that. And I think we all kind of feel that, or most of us do. And your situation, I mean, the bond that you formed with your mother in life seems to have carried over, and that's a truly amazing thing. I mean, even if, and it's so amazing that you decided to share with the world about that as well. I mean, that's just that's not only an amazing gift your mother's given to you, but an amazing gift
to everyone else,
to the world. And that's just amazing.
When you first started to get this information from her, and has it been in a, this is so fascinating to me. Was it in a conversation? Was it like a narrative? Is it like a narrative from her, or is it like a conversation with you? Or
it began on an airplane, and in my mind, I was looking out the window at the beautiful clouds, and I just posed a question in my mind to her, and I was in tears, sort of. You know, it was 19 days, I think, after she had died. And and knowing, of course, that she lived on, but still, the daughter in me misses my mother.
Of course.
So I was experiencing that, looking out the window, and I just framed the question to my mom. Mom, is there any distance for you? And she answered me. I heard her voice in my mind, not out loud, but in my mind. It was her voice. It was her beautiful Australian accent. It was, people have questioned me about it, and I've tried to explain it. It's like we hear music in our head. You can hear a song in your head. It gets stuck.
Right.
And you can hear the chorus, you can hear the drums, you can hear the violin, you can hear everything. And you don't know where is that in my mind where I can actually hear music. But you do. You can hear every detail of a song or a piece of music. And it was like that. And she talked about distance. She talked about dimension. She talked about shifting focus of intention. So I'm on the plane. And it's an hour and a half from Florida to New York, and I just start writing it down. And actually, I started asking in my mind questions, personal, about, you know, my life and about her illness and the experience we had together taking care of her. So my questions to her and my conversation was personal, and I was seeking comfort. But as we went along, the topics became more universal, and it was very, very exciting. I couldn't write it down fast enough. I was absolutely thrilled beyond words, and I got in the taxi and immediately started making phone calls to my cousin, my sister, you know, that this had happened. And I thought it was something that had happened and had stopped, but it didn't stop. I was visiting my two daughters in New York, and I was walking around holding this pad of paper. And honestly, they're my adult children, but I just didn't feel like I could tell them at the time. It was too much, you know, and they'd say, what are you doing? I say, oh, I'm just kind of keeping a journal, you know. I was just bombarded. It was a constant influx for a long, long time. I have the book here if you'd like me to read a little bit of so you could hear a bit of how it sounds.
Sure.
Yes, that'd be great.
Okay. The opening of the book. Well, first of all, you know, the book is called The Teen, A Mother's Wisdom from the Other Side. And her main focus, her main point she's making in these books is that we are all part of spiritual teens, that we all have a mission. We belong to a certain team, and we are, some of us are the boots on the ground, and some of us are in the lookout tower. So, and we're here to get certain things accomplished. So the opening is, you are not alone. You are not even really functioning as one person. Nobody is. You are a member of a team, a spiritual team that is near as breathing to you. And I am part of your team. I want to tell you of where I am. It's a place that you will recognize from my description, for you have spent more time here than on Earth. It has the familiar treehouse upon the mountaintop that you've seen in your mind, and a candle burns in the window there, waiting for you. She talks about how important it is, how our little bit matters so much. And this is why. This is how. The impetus behind your thoughts, words, songs, paintings, and other creations do not stay little. They grow, lengthen, widen, stretch, and magnify at a rate you cannot conceive of. Every burst of intention or thought radiates out and is duplicated as it flows, replicating itself throughout eternity. Like clusters of cell which multiply to form a child in the womb, so do your thought emanations multiply, link, and endure. Every moment, hour, day, and forevermore, your thoughts, which some may consider so insignificant, are growing by leaps and bounds as they seek out and merge with the thoughts of others of like kind. She goes on in book two to explain how these accumulated thoughts that cluster together form enormous vibrational spheres, and that we are all tapped into these vibrational spheres, a sphere of forgiveness, a sphere of anger, a sphere of love, a sphere of illness. And these are real things that we align ourselves with. And this explains why sometimes people go into a state of despair. They tap into a greater source of despair than they truly are in, which may push them to do something they normally wouldn't do. Just like you can tap into a more blissful sphere and enter a state that you normally are not capable of just as an individual. Wow. That's just a sample of some of the type of information that she has in these books.
That's very well written and very well put. And I know I've said this before in some of our past shows, but I think a lot of people do this. When I hear something like that, or it resonates with me. It makes a lot of sense. It connects with me, and I feel that is, without having to really need an explanation, I feel that what you're saying is true, that what she's saying, I guess, really through you is true. I mean, that really connects with me at a very core level. Dan, what do you think?
Well, I have to say that once again, I am amazed at how each of us has a different experience in life, but how there are so many ways to come to the same conclusions. And you're talking about, her talking about being a team and not being alone and so forth. I was just talking to someone today and said the same thing. You know, we're not alone, and we may not see everyone around us that's around us or see the whole situation, but we aren't alone, and we are part of a community, but it's the same idea. I love the way that's presented too. That was just, that really was very, very, it does resonate.
There was an eloquent resonance in it that I picked up on. I tell you, it is true how all roads seem to lead to the same place. And,
they do.
And it's almost like a little joke or trick of universe. So many people have so many, sure, different beliefs and ideas and whatnot, but at the core of them seem to resonate a lot of the same things. And that's just so well put. Just something that I wanted to ask you, briefly about this automatic writing process. Now for those who haven't, and I actually am not really very familiar with automatic writing, I can sort of contextually figure out what it is, but can you maybe describe what is going through your mind when you do that? Describe the process.
Okay. Well, when I was a child, I would actually close my eyes and that my hand would move with a will of its own, mm-hmm, and write poetry and write various things that were very spiritual in nature. But this is not like that, although I've thought of trying it that way. This is more like it's almost like it's hard to describe. It's almost like I know I have a down. There's some sort of download, and instantaneously, I have this enormous amount of information, and it's all compressed into one tiny moment. Everything I've written in these books, I experience it. Mm-hmm. It's not just an interesting thought it's like it's real. It's a revelation. Yes. It's a clarification. It's an aha moment. I mean, everything in me is just electrified by the information. So I experience it. So it becomes a part of me. So as that comes in, that rush, I just begin to write it, and my hand moves so quickly, and the writing is very large and scribbly. It's not really the way I write. And I know I'm fumbling around because there's
Listen, I understand totally. There are so many things I have tried to explain to people, and I sometimes just have to tell them I don't have the words to totally describe it. Sometimes it's either an emotion, but a lot of times it's something that as humans, I think we just don't always have a framework to you know.
Brain around it. It's almost like I know the entire plot of a movie in 1 second. It's like if somebody could just put in your brain whole story of some movie you've seen, and you know the beginning, you know the plot, you know the characters, you know how it ends.
And then you've just got to get it down.
And then you got to get it down.
Have you ever done this on the keyboard?
Well, no, I haven't done that per se, but during the time that this book was written, I woke up and two times my mother, who was a singer, channeled two pieces of music through me.
Wow.
Of incredible, the first one was called Pure Remembrance. And it's just this incredible thing in another language. It's not an earthly language.
Oh, wow.
So.
Wow. I bet that's incredible.
I'd be happy to share it with you if you'd like to play it or hear it sometime.
Well,
yes,
although we're about to take a break here, so why don't we do that right when we come back? And we'll be back right after this.
Want to start a website but don't know how? No problem. The experts at OCS Solutions have you covered. We offer a complete range of internet services, from domain name registration, web hosting, and even our easy-to-use website building tool that allows you to create a website with just a few clicks and be live in minutes. Pick from thousands of templates and samples, upload your own content, or use a mix of both. It's entirely up to you. And don't worry, you won't outgrow OCS. We host websites both small and large. Domain names start at just $8 a year and come loaded with plenty of extras to get you started. Visit OCSDomains.com to learn more or call 1-800-672-8415. That's OCSDomains.com or call 1-800-672-8415.
Reiki is a Japanese relaxation technique that promotes healing and balance. It is a form of energy work that helps unblock areas that are affected by illness, stress, grief, anxiety, or other types of trauma, and it can be given in person or from the Reiki practitioner to the recipient at a distance. It is gentle and soothing and is simple to learn as well. Our bodies have the natural ability to maintain health and heal themselves when energy flows smoothly throughout our energy system, and Reiki works well either by itself or along with traditional or alternative medical treatments to help keep energy channels flowing and the mind and body in balance. I offer Reiki, the Ho Chi, and other types of energy sessions in my home in Florence, Alabama, as well as distance Reiki to any location in the world. I also teach Reiki classes from levels 1 through Karuna Reiki Master, as well as the Ho Chi. To learn more, please visit alabamareiki.com. That's alabamareiki.com.
And welcome back to Well-Rounded Corners. I'm Ruth Ann, and Robert is with us, and we have Frances Key with us tonight. And we are about to play some really beautiful music, and I think you'll enjoy this. Well, she can tell you a little bit more about it. We talked a little bit about the before the break, and can you tell us what we're going to hear, please?
Yes. This piece of music is called Pure Remembrance. I woke up one day. I am a musician, but I've never written anything like this. I'm also a singer, but I do not sing like this. So I woke up one day, felt very connected to my mother from an experience that I'd had through the night, and recorded this in a home studio. I haven't even listened to it probably in 6 or 8 months. And when I just heard that clip, I was just so stunned to hear again that that was my mother's voice, not mine.
That is amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, during the production of this episode, the original file provided by Francis was lost, and so we won't be able to play the song for you. We do apologize for the mishap. It did leave us to wonder if perhaps things weren't meant to work out this way. Perhaps Francis's mother wasn't prepared for the world to hear it. We now resume with the rest of the show. Well, that was amazing.
That was truly beautiful. That sounded like a whole chorus of angels.
Now you said that it's in a language that you don't know, or that, as far as you know, isn't on Earth. Have you ever tried to write out the lyrics to that in a phonetic sense?
I did. I wrote out phonetically, and a friend of mine looked at it, and it seemed closer to Latin maybe than anything else. So we looked up on the internet in Latin what it would mean, and it did kind of make sense. It was about I spin and I dance and I twirl in the mist, and that kind of a thing, and about the legacy. There's a word about legacy, but it's hard to tell, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know Latin, but it did have some sense to it.
Well, I have to say, really, it was so beautiful that I wasn't even trying to listen to words. I just was just caught up in it. So it was just incredible. That was beautiful.
Yeah, the musical part of it, you know, I'm an amateur musician myself, and I was, you know, whenever I listen to a piece of music, I analyze it, and I don't know if that, I think the first time through kind of hampers my enjoyment of it, but I did really enjoy it. But I was wondering, the musical style of it doesn't really seem to be, you mentioned you don't really do this kind of musical style. I don't know that I've heard that kind of musical style per se. I've heard that kind of, I've heard some things close to it, but I haven't really ever heard that before specifically, but yet it feels familiar to me in a way as well. You know, what are your thoughts on that?
You said it feels what to you?
It feels familiar to me in a way, though, too. Like, it sounds like nothing I've ever heard, yet it sounds like something I've heard before, if that makes any sense.
That makes sense to me. Well, it is so beautiful, and it's so ethereal, but on the other hand, it's also grounded. I don't have the words, but that's just the words. Those are the words that came to me.
I don't know, you know.
Right.
My mother was raised in Australia and trained as a classical singer, and her mind was filled with the great operas of all time. Joan Sutherland was another Australian opera singer, you know, and she loved her. So maybe there's an overtone of something from somewhere like that. I don't really know, musically speaking.
When I say that it seems familiar, that I don't mean that I think that it doesn't seem familiar in anything that I've heard.
Yes.
But it seems familiar. There's something there, like Ruthann said, there's an ethereal quality to it that
it's kind of draws you to it. It's something that for me, I wanted to sit there and just let it surround me. You know, it was like being inside the, it's interesting. You said, did you say mist, or what did you say? Something similar. That's what I felt like. And that was just, that was really special. We appreciate you so much that you shared that with us.
Spontaneous. We didn't plan that at all.
No, but that happens all the time on our show. We like spontaneous. Absolutely. Well, you know, I mean, so often we have conversations with people and they start off in one direction and they end up in the other. And I believe that that's the way they were meant to go. But
yes, I do firmly believe that whatever happens, it happens for a reason, and that's the way it was supposed to happen. And, you know, who knows, someone hearing this might, you know, who knows? I know it moved me, and it sounds like it moved Robert too. And
absolutely. And I appreciate you sharing something so personal like that.
Yes.
You know, your story, It reminds me of and I wish I could remember the names, and I ordinarily wouldn't share a story like this with when I'm so vague on the facts, but it resonates so much with what you have that I'm going to go ahead. It was two paranormal researchers, actually, in the late 80s and the early 90s, and I'll look this up and link it on our website, but it's two paranormal researchers, and they were using radio frequencies to try to communicate with the spirit world or, you know, other frequencies of existence. And one of them was diagnosed with it seems like cancer or some kind of thing where he knew he was going to die within a, you know, relatively short period. And they both spent a lot of time developing a way to for the person who was going to die to communicate with the remaining researcher. And through an untuned radio, through a radio that had no specific, when you tune a knob on a radio, you listen to specific frequencies. But yeah, they modified a radio where it listened to everything at once somehow. And I'm not exactly sure on the technical details, but that's the basics of it. And this man that was this guy's paranormal researcher partner, he, when he died, he did communicate through him through this radio they devised and through the methods they devised. I mean, it was a very sort of scientific way of doing it. But your story resonates to me on this. And I'm not saying that you prearranged this with your mother, at least on a conscious level, but that it reminds me of that. I don't know why, but.
Well, definitely, you know, subconsciously, we must have had some sort of plan.
Well, it would make sense from your history together.
Yes. I have said since, I don't know why it didn't occur to me that this would happen, but it was the farthest thing from my mind. I did believe I would have some sort of experience with my mother, because in addition to the automatic writing as a child and off and on through my life, I had many experiences that people would call psychic. Mm-hmm. So I wasn't surprised by any of that, but I just never expected quite this.
Well, that's kind of what I was going to ask you. One question that I was going to ask you was if you'd ever had any other similar, I know you had said that the automatic writing, but I had wondered if you had ever had any visits from anyone who had moved on or
yes, I have.
I thought you might have, and that's why I just wondered, because it would be it would be unusual for someone, or more unusual. I know you had a very close bond with your mother, but to all of a sudden have this, and it would make so much sense as a progression from that you already did that up to a point. I'm not saying it couldn't happen that way, but it would be, you know, kind of just come out of that, I would think.
Right. Well, yes, all my life. Since I was very young, I had many kinds of experiences, and that is one reason my mother took me to these groups and churches, and she and I became part of a metaphysical church here in Jacksonville, Florida, called the Universal Church of Ontology. I was there from the age of 12 until I was, I think, 28, and she was there with me. But it moved away, and, you know, things change in your life. And,
right.
Alliances change with different groups, but all throughout my life, I had many experiences. And specifically, when my former husband, when his mother died, she was in the hospital. I thought she was getting better. I had no idea she would die. We were asleep, and I was there alone, and my children in the house, and he lived elsewhere. And she died that night, and she woke me up by grabbing my foot. I was in bed, asleep. She grabbed my foot. I looked at her, and there she stood. And she said, "You get my son to a hospital, or he's going to die."
Wow. Wow.
I knew. So that was at 4 in the morning. Well, she died around 4 in the morning, I found out. But at 6 o'clock, I called his brother. And I said, you know, what's going on with him? And he said, "I've got him in the car. We're going to the hospital."
Wow.
He'd had a turn worse in this condition he was battling. So that was,
wow.
Mom died last night. And I said, "Well, I have to tell you this." And I told him. a man who has no background in that whatsoever. I think he probably wrote me off as a total lunatic. That's what happened.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Just many, many, many things of that nature. But there were one-time, events. Just one-time events. More than a year of communication.
I don't know that I've met anybody that I've known well enough to talk about such things that hasn't had some event like that. And I find it, you obviously have had a wonderful experience here with your mother and connection. Yeah, absolutely. And that's definitely unusual. And amazing that you've had that, but just the casual contact experiences with people that have passed on, it's amazing how many people have. And, that is so reassuring to me. If you ever were to think about, I guess when I die, that's going to be the end, it's hard to say that would ever be the case, because there's just so much to the contrary. So much that, like I said earlier, that the opposite of death is not birth, that the opposite of death is not life, rather it's birth. Yeah. And life is eternal. And so it just seems like that there's so much evidence to that, both from a scientific perspective and a metaphysical perspective, that it's really hard to argue and make the argument that that's all there is to life. It's just, we're here on this rock, we just do our little thing, and then we're gone. But, your mother speaks to the contrary on that quite eloquently in your books. And
it's true. It is true that almost anyone that you start a conversation with will, it doesn't matter what walk of life they come from, usually will have some testimony of something they have experienced. That's been my experience anyway. I've had many, many of these kinds of things. And so and my mother did too. So it's very, understandable that it could happen again.
Yes.
But to this magnitude.
Yes.
It has surprised me. And of course, delighted me to no end. And book one is 208 pages. Book two is 400.
Wow.
It's a very, very, for many people who've been reading these books, a very profound experience to get this information. And like I said, there's nothing new under the sun, but the unique manner in which a lot of this is phrased, it's the phraseology, it's the analogies given, the examples given. It's very different.
Well, just the little bit that you read us, it was just very profound, and I see exactly what you mean. It's the way it's presented to you, and I was noticing on your website you had a couple of topics that are covered in the books that I know you don't want to go into it all, that it's in the book, and people I know will enjoy reading it if they haven't already, which they may have. It sounds so interesting. I noticed one little section here. If you could just tell us just a little, it's mentioned spiritual invigorators.
Yes. Sure. I don't mind sharing any of this. Be happy to.
There were just a few terms here that I thought were very interesting. Can you tell us what you mean or what she means by that?
She's talking about team leaders. And she says team leaders work within every single band of consciousness, even what appears to be the most depraved states. And they don't always manifest as saints in that mix. Some team members agree to work in extremely dark vibratory situations so they can be a presence in the midst of those struggling lives. Therefore, we have no concept of who is really whom, where they really are, or what they're really doing. The generalization of master, spiritual master, is far overused, for there are eternal stages of attainment. So if these invigorators were not present at every level, the banner of grace could not function as it does. Just like DNA in the physical body has switches that turn on at a certain point of a fetus's development, so does the soul have spiritual DNA that requires stimulation before it can manifest. So the master or spiritual invigorator's presence at every level is the quickening agent, designed to wake up, activate, and launch the spiritual DNA in other souls wherever they may be.
Wow. Wow.
It's interesting to me that you mentioned that it's not just, the often used term light workers, kind of when you said that, occurred to me. But you're saying that this occurs without respect to good or evil, if you want to put things in those very fixed terms. It sounds like that they also work at, like you said, the dark level too, that these can kind of be dark ringleaders to work on negative or lower issues.
Yes.
That's interesting. Do people...
They will enter those realms in order to stimulate, to turn on spiritual DNA switches, so to assist with the evolution.
Do people, are people, you said we're sent here with a mission, or a series of missions. Do we know, is there a certain level of awareness before we're born that we know what these missions are? We kind of lose the perception of that when we're alive, and then, you know, when we return to that realm, that we know again. Is it that kind of, because I've heard that described that way before.
Well, I don't know. She doesn't address the fact that if we consciously know what our mission is, or if it's a subconscious thing. I know in book two, she talks about how a ship has this engine in deep down within the hold, and it's all surrounded by thick metal, and that some of our awareness is up on deck, and then some of us our awareness is buried like that in the hold of a ship, and it's really what's running us. It's like the engine that's running us.
Mm.
Part of us that knows at a very deep level. She really talks a lot about what an incredible place this earth is, and that she is not trying to make people think that they to yearn to leave here and to go to the other side, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. She says, if you don't mind me reading a little more of
that. No, please do. Please do.
Okay. I'm stirred to remind you this dimension I'm in is not more desirable or better than the one you're living in. These various environments that our souls enter are just that, environments. Consciousness is the only reality, and it's not dependent on any location of the soul. You are exploring the earth for a limited time, much as a sailor goes forth for a while to see what lies in distant lands. That exploration does not define the totality of who that sailor is. It's only one of the many temporary experiences in life that he has chosen. The earth is your current land of exploration, and it's the most wonderful school designed to teach you how to exert your true essence while operating in a field of distractions and with a wide variety of vibrations. Therefore, I want to instill in you the realization the earth is an incredible, rare, and exciting dimension established specifically for the development of spiritual stability. Your planet is a treasure.
Hmm. Wow.
Yes.
You know, that is so interesting. The mention there, how she mentions the distractions, and I've come to believe that's so true. You know, if we close our eyes and we try to focus on where an object is that we've misplaced, or some answer that we're trying to get to a solution, or listen to our guides, or whatever a person might refer to, whoever he or she listens to whomever, right. You know, this world we're on, some would call it the middle world or whatever we want to refer to it, the earth, there are so many distractions, it's no wonder it takes us a while to figure out what's real or to us, or what's truth, or what's, you know, however we even want to call that. It's not surprising it takes a while. And that's wonderful. The way she puts it is so clear that it is distraction. All these things that seem important, and they're really distractions.
Well, but if we can learn to keep our focus mm-hmm. in the midst of distractions,
yes.
like We can do it anywhere. And it's sort of like, she says, it's like people who go into training for swimming. They'll have you swim with boots and clothes and everything on. And then when they go to swim in the race and they just have on their bathing suit, they feel like they're flying. You know, it builds up the muscles. If you can swim under those conditions, you can swim under any conditions.
Yes. Yes.
So it's part of what, it's part of what we're doing. There's, she says it's a workout gym for the soul.
Yes. That, I love the way of putting it that way. This is a spiritual sort of
boot camp.
Yeah. Well, a training. Yeah. It's a, that's a very, a wonderful way to think about the earth. And that's,
does
it, that's.
Does she ever make mention of different, well, you know, she mentions this being one stage or one area that we, that our souls progress through. Does she make any reference or mention of any other stages that, that we will encounter, have already encountered, or anything like that?
She says that we chose to come to this dimension this time, and we've been in other ones, and we will be in other ones. She said that there's always a transition. She says, for example, she says, I will die, she will die, to where she is now and transition elsewhere eventually. That it's a transition. I mean, you can call it dying, though, because she said where she is, everybody is vibratorily attracted to where they need to be. And so people are at peace, souls are at peace, because they are where they really they are with those who they who are similar. And she says she can drop in on other levels of consciousness, like you might go into a different neighborhood to visit someone. I got the impression that to go to higher ones, it's more by invitation. And yet you're able to drop into lower ones to visit someone, like maybe you go into a bad neighborhood to see a friend.
Is that not really unlike what we're in now, though? I mean, to go into higher realms, to go into higher realms, it requires or higher levels of vibration, as you say. From our level, it requires quite a lot of work, patience, and I like your what you said there, invitation. But yet, to drift into lower realms of vibratory experiences from our level requires very little. In fact, it's probably a little too easy sometimes.
Yeah.
And so that sounds like that metaphor persists at her level. It might be pervasive throughout existence.
Well, there are so many levels of. I mean, you know, people talk about the other side, but. There are just so many dimensions and so many levels of existence that there is no black and white earth and other side. There just isn't. There's just multiple, you know, locations.
Right, yeah. And how, you know, I think this is such a hopeful message for humans that it's not as depressing, you might say, as, you know what, I didn't get to do what I wanted to do in this life, and so I guess that's all there is. Or there's so much evil in the world, or however we can draw ourselves into getting depressed about things. And that just doesn't ring true, and she is reinforcing what others have said, but she says it so eloquently. And I have to say, it makes me wonder, too, how many others have tried to tell various people this, but they weren't on the same, frequency as the person who was trying to give them the message and didn't pay attention or didn't write it down. And it's such a gift you gave the rest of us and to each other to have listened and to have gotten your notepad and written it down. I'm sure your family must have thought, well, what, when they found out what you were doing, they must have wondered.
Well, my one of my daughters is very open to all this. So is my sister. I have four daughters, and they've all been lovely and responsive and respectful. I think they've read the books. They grapple with some of the concepts, you know, which is normal. I've had no negativity.
Wonderful.
No negativity in my personal circle.
That's good.
I did have one friend call me up and she said, I just want to hear your voice. And I talked to her a while. She said, okay, I just wanted to make sure you hadn't gone crazy. It sounds fine.
Well, how nice you could reassure her.
I want to ask another question in regards to the different levels of consciousness again. And again, this has been a pervasive thing. I've heard this with other, and everybody, just like with everybody who sees something has a different take on it, everybody has a different take on this as well. You mentioned that it is easy to go to lower vibrational states, but yet there isn't usually much of I'm inferring that she's saying that there isn't much of a need to go to lower states, that generally that's to be maybe avoided or time there brief, or it's just that they've moved on. Is that the reason why people who will, pass on, loved ones might experience them visiting for a short while, but then after a while they don't really hear much from them again? Is that what it is? Are they kind of moving on to another realm where they're just not getting connected? It's like someone moving away and, they might call a few times, but eventually you become out of sync. Is that sort of thing?
Like, well, that? I've never really asked her that, and I don't think she really ever really addressed it. My mother, a person that I know stayed in her house, this house, after she died, and my mother visited him, and he had a profound experience, and this person had never even believed in life after death.
Wow.
So she did remain connected, but she no longer has done that, and she doesn't do that anymore. I heard her voice audibly out loud in my daughter's home the morning of her memorial. She called my name, clear as a bell, as if she was standing right in the room.
Wow.
So I think, from what I understand, from what people have said about the subject, but not really her saying, some people are here because they're confused.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But then others are here because there was something they really had to come and say or do.
Right. They're not finished yet.
Yeah. And I think that was what was going on with her. And in particular, that she visited.
And I think your special bond has made it possible for you to, you were obviously close already, and you both shared, it sounds to me as if you had developed and welcomed your gifts of seeing and hearing things that many people say, oh, I didn't hear that, or that must have been my imagination. And you two were both open to it, and being so bonded, it would make sense to me. And I think that's a wonderful gift that you gave each other and obviously gave us.
What a wonderful thing. I mean, what a wonderful thing that you, in her reaching you, I mean, she was, I guess, had a mission to reach you and share this information with you. Mm-hmm. But as you said, the intentions go out from there. The message and the creativity goes out from there, because not only did she pass that on to you, but now you're passing it on through your books, to thousands of people through this radio. You're reaching people. People right now are listening to this and hearing the benefit of what your mother shared with you. And I mean, that is, that really goes to, I mean, if we ever needed validation, and I'm so past validation, but if we ever needed validation as to these kind of things, what she said about how your intentions and how your actions ripple throughout reality.
That's so true.
Right.
You can prove that right now, because this is what's happening. You are sharing this with us, and it's going out to everybody. And that's
And what you give your children with this too. If they have children, then, even if they don't, whoever that they, contact in their lives, you've brought this to them. And it is such a good example of exactly what she was talking about. It does ripple out like the pond.
Absolutely. We have about, say 2 or 3 minutes left. Are there any other segments you'd like to read us?
Yes, I think it would be wonderful for the listeners to hear this one, because it's so comforting. And I'd like to end with this beacon of light of hope here.
Okay.
She talks about having realizations that bring change in your life. And she said the greatest value in these realizations is the power of your realizations to change both your past and your future. Many people have the idea that if they have a stain in their past, it's simply there forever, and all they can do is live with it and strive to do better. This is a logical assumption, but it's only logical on the earth. Once you're no longer on the earth, you see that realizations have the power to reach back in time and reconfigure an event. You see that by changing the result of something, the vibration within the events that occurred to cause that result are retroactively changed as well. How can this be so, you ask? Time, space, future, and past do not exist except in your dimension, and they exist there only because you need them, so you may more clearly observe principles in action. In a timeless state, where now is the only time, a spiritual change, which is authentically wrought, becomes the dominant vibration in relation to that situation and affects the entire chain of events, which are actually condensed into the now. One analogy for this can be found in your computer. When you choose a new font, you have the power to instantly highlight and change the font of all the words you have typed in the past that relate to that specific document. Your new perception of a font has transformed the entire thing and in an instant. Or imagine a frozen stream of ice. If you heat the mouth of the stream with an intense enough instrument, the ice will begin to melt all the way back, changing the ice into free-flowing water, transforming the rigidly conditioned past through the power of a new condition in the present.
Wow.
I find that very comforting because
yes.
I have made my share of mistakes.
We all have that, that's for sure.
That's definitely
that
a wonderful,
wonderful
way to look
thought.
At it.
That's absolutely a wonderful thought, and I would believe that. I agree with that.
Absolutely. How would people reach you to check out your books and learn about your work? What's the best way to reach you?
Well, the website is www.theteambooks.com. TEAMBOOKS, the team books with the S.com. You can see a video of my mother on there speaking on the stage about 6 or 7 years ago, a show that I wrote that she was in. You can hear some of my music. You can read about the book. You can order both books. And my contact information is on there.
That's wonderful. I encourage everyone to go to the website. We'll have that linked in the show. If you're listening to this on BBS Radio, just go to our website, wellroundedcorners.com. You'll find the show, the links to her site, and the material we've discussed in this show. Frances, it's been wonderful having you on. It's been a treasure, and it's been amazing.
Yes, thank you so much.
Thank you. It was wonderful talking to both of you, and I'd like to send you a book. So send me an email so I can send you one.
Okay, sounds good. Wonderful. Appreciate it.
All right.
Thank you very much. And remember, everyone, you can catch us on wellroundedcorners.com. You can download all of our shows. They're free. You can also find us on iTunes by searching Well Rounded Corners. And if you subscribe, you can get all the shows automatically as they're released.
Until then, thank you for listening. We'll see you next time.